Welcome to On the Mark with Peter Buckley and Mark O'Donnell. Our podcast is dedicated to helping Christians target the right priorities in their apostolic and interior lives.
Well, hello and welcome back to On the Mark. It's been a little bit since we have posted a broadcast, so we will address that in a minute or so. But before I do that, this is Peter Buckley acting as your host and welcoming, as always, Mark O'Donnell. Mark?
Thank you, Peter.
Glad to have you here. So we won't get into great details on to explain our absence, but one had to do with me, and I was afflicted with not a major medical issue, but a little bit of an issue that I had to contend with for the past 5 or 6 weeks. And gratefully, I'm rebounding. And then Mark also was out for a few weeks as well. And, you know, as I get around and we talk to people that have been listening to this broadcast, this podcast, we're very grateful for the positive comments we've been receiving, all comments, and the positive ones for sure. And a lot of people do remark a question, who is this guy? Who's this Mark O'Donnell guy? And how does he know so much? Well, one, he's just been gifted as, you know, a smart guy, but over, you know, past couple decades, he goes away for a period of time and something that we would call an annual course where he learns a lot about, you know, whether it be philosophy or theology, whatever the case might be. So Mark, you were on your course for the past few weeks or so. Why don't you just tell us, you know, what that was all about and how was
it? Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Peter. Now that's a good question because it's a little bit of an enigma for people, but I mean, the single members in Opus Dei, the numeraries and associates, we study philosophy and theology and even though we may not ever be ordained, in my case, I'm not going to be ordained, never was ordained. But all the men and the women study philosophy and theology just so that we can have a better grounding in our faith. So during the summer, we spend 2 to 3 weeks doing that. When we're younger, we can spend more time. But as we get older and have careers, we can't spend that much time. But normally it's 2 to 3 weeks. And so this past 2 to 3 weeks, I was reviewing a course on theological anthropology. And the professor was over in Rome, actually, and he just did a YouTube course. It was about 30 classes. But so that's what we did. You know, we have like 2 classes in the morning on the course. In the afternoon, we have sports, free time, siesta. You know, the evenings have get-togethers, watch movies, have an appetizer, things like that, celebrate birthdays. Nice. So it's a good break from real estate.
Yeah. Well, we're glad you're back. Yeah. You know, so over the past few sessions, we've discussed some writings. We always like to take a writing sample or writing piece and use that as kind of the framework upon which we'll build our discussion. And we've done a couple sessions on some of the writings of Romano Guardini. We've done more recently something that Pope Francis had put forth, and we've done some Pope Benedict as well. Going to transition a little bit away from those types of scholars and theological minds. And we just got through an interesting season here in the United States of, you know, this commencement season. And so it's interesting, occasionally amidst all of the what are traditionally pretty boring commencement speeches, one or two of them kind of breaks through and has a real impact and really kind of provokes a lot of discussion. And so there were two that took place, and both of them happened to have been presented by athletes, professional athletes. The one we'll start discussing, we will talk about the content of the talk because a lot has been written on it, but Harrison Butker, who's a kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs and a very good one, gave a commencement address at Benedictine College, and that was, by many accounts, a very compelling delivery and address, and it also caused a great deal of controversy. So again, we're not going to focus necessarily on the content there, but I think it's really, you know, the question, and then how do we apply this to our situations? You know, how does this guy, this kicker, get the podium he has, first of all, to get up and make a speech? And then interestingly, you know, why did he find so much support from even those people who disagreed with him, many teammates, including one that has risen in prominence, you know, when Travis Kelce. So I think, you know, if you went back historically, said, well, I mean, here's a few names, right? If you were to say, well, who are Leonard Leo, Bishop Robert Barron, and Bishop Andrew Cozens? Now, some might say, well, you know, I know Leonard Leo is a legal scholar and an important political figure, and Bishop Barron is a, you know, very prominent bishop in the church, and, you know, Bishop Andrew Cozens, I think, was a bishop in that area. But prior to Butker, what they have in common is those were the three most recent speakers at this university's commencement, at a Benedictine College's commencement. And they were probably fine speeches, and most likely not really remembered that widely beyond the graduates and the guests at the commencement. And so you say, well, how was, you know, this guy qualified to give this address? Well, first of all, Butker was a native of Kansas. He's a self-professed practicing Catholic, which is appropriate for Catholic school. But most importantly, he was a notable player on a Super Bowl winning football team, the Kansas City Chiefs. And so you say, well, how many people heard this speech? Is it similar to what you got from Leo and Bishop Barron? And so, well, again, you had the students and the families. But in addition to that, you had another nearly 3 million persons through online resources who heard this speech. And you say, well, that's interesting. How is this even relevant to us? Well, who is this guy? He's a kicker. So he's part of a football team. But if you know anything about kickers, I mean, they're mainly hanging out with punters and the long snapper, maybe a kick return guy. So in the hierarchy of an NFL locker room, they're near the very bottom. And yet he, you know, this guy, despite that, received the support of nearly all of his teammates. And the reason why, I think, we can talk about this, Mark, your sense on it, is because he's really good at what he does. And so I think what this tells us about professional competence and how it's perceived by colleagues and bosses is really very important. So maybe just talk about that, Mark. I mean, you know, how important is this for all of us, despite what our role might be, to display professional competence such that we have an impact on those around us?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it. Thank you, Peter. I mean, I think the competence just gives us, you know, the right to have a conversation with other people. Now, I think with the Butker case, and I've thought a lot about this, I think the reason it was so controversial is that here is a guy who has achieved the American dream, right? Three Super Bowls. He's 28 years old, and he should be totally self-fulfilled. And he's like what everybody wants to do. They all want to be professional, you know, whatever area that they're focused on. But the problem is he's advocating, at least in that speech, he's talking about two vocations, motherhood and the priesthood, that require a lot of sacrifice and self-gift. And he's talking about, well, you're going to get fulfillment through that process. In other words, God's going to fulfill you. It isn't just all on you. You're not the sole architect of your fulfillment and joy. And so that's, I think, why it's caused controversy, is because people are like, well, this guy has kind of blown our cover because he has already achieved the American dream. And he's telling us, hey, this is not giving me all the fulfillment that it's giving me quite a bit of fulfillment, but the real fulfillment is from God. And in his own personal life, I think he would say that. And you could doubt that because he's so successful. But I think that allows him then to talk about these other vocations. And people don't want to get their fulfillment from God. We want to do it on our own. And so it's hard for them to accept what he's saying. And I think that's why there's controversy. But there should be controversy. Because none of us can be self-fulfilled. I mean, you look at all... I mean, just for instance, not that I do this every day, even though I'm a good Irishman, but if you read obituaries of famous people, almost inevitably, no matter what they achieved, right, at the end or at the middle of the obituary is going to be, but the real love of his life or her life, you know, was their wife, their family, their sick daughter who had Down syndrome. And that's true. That's ultimately the real thing, right? Now, doing $70 billion of deals is nice, but it's once you've done that, you realize it's not here. And if we're smart, we'll look at people who have achieved but don't have that religious grounding like Buckner does, and then they go off the rails a little bit, right? I mean, look at so many people who've been so successful, and yet they do really unstable things at the end of their lives or midlife. They leave their wife, they leave their family, you know, marry someone much younger, all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, that's understandable if you don't have the financial foundation. I don't know if I'm making sense to you, Peter.
No, but it does. I like this. I like the perspective.
I think that's the key thing, and that's why this.
So, I think, by the way, you meant you. I think you meant to say the spiritual foundation, not financial foundation.
Oh, I did mean.
Yeah, think of money. Your money.
Sorry.
Close the deal here.
I'm thinking of my closing next week. Is it going to happen or not? but I think that's the takeaway there, because, and I think that's why his teammates are a little bit perplexed. They know he's a great kicker, and they're kind of deferential. And they're like, he's a good kicker. He has his own views. I don't agree with his views. But I think that the more interesting part is those two vocations he's talking about, you know,
Let me talk about the teammate situation here, because I think it was pretty interesting, because almost all his teammates came to his defense. And I think part of the reason was they already knew he espoused the positions he professed in that commencement speech. And so I'm just thinking again, how do we apply this to our situation? So what does it tell us about how we live our faith? Perhaps, you know, for a lot of us in a very hostile work environment, and yet still get along with our colleagues in management. It seems like, in his case, sincerity and charity were very important here. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's critical. I mean, the reality is environments change when holy people go into them and work in them. They're not going to change otherwise. I mean, you can't change it from the sidelines. You can try to. As it's an enigma to me, because you look like on YouTube and you see all these views of, you know, different priests and bishops who talk about spiritual topics, and they're, you know, everyone loves them, right? But they're not, those guys aren't working in a workplace. And so what's needed is lay people like you and me, Peter, and others who are working in the workplace and can help the people who we're working with. And when you're working with them, they see it lived. And when they see it lived, that's much more convincing than just hearing it. They have to see you struggle to live it, and then it slowly sinks in, and then you'll have an opportunity to speak with them. But you get the opportunity because, A, you take the job to work with them, and B, you're competent at what you do and good at what you do. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't keep the job anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get fired. And so when that happens, then, okay, it takes time. Like, I remember one of my past bosses in real estate, you know, and I had an operation in the hospital. She came and visited me, and she told me, she said, you know, I think what you're doing at Opus Dei is good. I think you should stay in Opus Dei, because now I understand it. But she says, but Mark, at first I didn't really understand what was going on. But after a couple of years, and because I worked with her for like 4 years, 5 years, she said, after 1 or 2 years, I got to see it. And I said, yeah, that's, here's a guy who's honest and truthful when other people here are not that way. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who's working hard but not going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who can have a couple drinks but not, like, you know, drink himself into a stupor. Those aren't things you can fake.
Yeah.
If you're working with people, they just call you on your bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
So,
no,
and
good.
They should. But see, then that has that impact. But what does it demand? It demands that you and I make the sacrifice of trying to be holy ourselves, and then going out and, in a good sense, wasting our lives working with people.
Right.
But yeah. That's not wasted. We think it looks kind of wasted, but it's not. It's not.
Yeah. Notice, you know, the in Buckner's case, the NFL and his direct employer here, the Chiefs, they're trying to say a little something, but really he was making these comments as a private citizen. And so it wasn't in front of an NFL locker room or the Chiefs facility. And so what does this tell us about how we should behave in a non-professional setting? I mean, perhaps, you know, social media engagement, posting online, organizations we join, and so on. I mean, how does that, our awareness of these things, should we be conscious of these things potentially impacting our professional profile?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think you have to.
And then do we moderate or do we modulate or do we try to rein things in? And
I mean, I think the only way to really help somebody is to be present for them. And you're really not present on social media.
Hmm.
Right. Like we'll do this podcast. Right. But we're not engaging people in conversation. But if we go down to Tosca and have a few beers and we can talk to people, that's much more effective because they can see you. They can ask questions. They can judge you, your body language, and they can just, you know, you're not hot. You're not kind of, it's not a one way street. And in the workplace, it's even more because you're going to have good days and bad days. And people need to see that, you know, we're just like everybody else, you know. We have to struggle against sin and we have to struggle to live virtue. It doesn't come natural to anybody. But if they don't see it lived, it doesn't enter into them. And then when you have a scandal that undermines the credibility of an institution, that makes it even harder, right? Because now you're kind of, okay, well, I'm not going to listen to what the church says because we've had the priest scandal and, you know, they've undermined their credibility. And we're 20 years into that. And it's going to take another 30 to kind of pull out of it, you know, fully, I think, but that'll happen. Mm-hmm. But what really happens and what really impacts us and others is being with them. I mean, it sounds obvious, but so I tell people there are two ways you can really help somebody. One is if you get married to them and you accompany them through thick and thin, up and down, all the way to the end. Or if you commit to work with them for a period of time on a project that's, you know, you're mutually attractive to both of you.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're spending significant portions of time with somebody, you know, and they're seeing your good side, your bad side, everything like that. And I think, you know, these guys have seen Harrison in the locker room. They've seen him in a lot of different venues. And, I think they're comfortable with him because of that. And obviously he's a performer, right? If he were shanking the ball and not missing extra points.
That's right. You know, there was, of course, a lot written about this, this one speech. One commentator, I thought, cleverly remarked that he thought parts of it were a little tone deaf. And this guy was generally pretty favorable towards what he had to say. But he said, you know, as a kicker, being a little tone deaf is not a bad thing, right? He said, and this guy's had the ability to tune out 80,000 screaming fans. It's part of his job, right? And he just went and he kind of chronicled how successful he's been. But he said, it's, you know, he got really good by learning how to not listen to the people who yell at him. The other day, kind of concurrent with, you know, reading some stuff on just some analyses and summaries of the speech, I discovered an envelope that contained a letter that a friend of mine wrote to the headmaster of his son's private non-Catholic school, asking the headmaster to refrain from teaching sex education at the school. It was really beautifully, charitably, and persuasively written. And what he was trying to convey was he knew that if the headmaster were to abolish the sex ed curriculum, he would be standing alone among his peers. And so he included a quote from the school's handbook. And the quote was, having the courage to stand alone if necessary for what they believe is right and willing to use their influence for the good of others. And this is, of course, what Buckert did. I mean, what you know, so for us, what are the limits we need to obey in expressing the truth, capital T truth, in a professional environment?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think we have to just be brutally honest with people, but not be overly dogmatic.
Mm.
You know, you can't be anyway, right? Because you're a minority in the workplace, right? You can try to be overly dogmatic, but then, yeah, your colleagues, if they like you and they're friends with you, will just say, come on, cut the crap. I mean, you don't believe mm-hmm. that, do you? You say you just have to be able to deliver the message in a compelling way. And most importantly is that you believe it and that I believe it. And people can tell that. They can look in your eyes and they can say, yeah, I believe you, or I think you're full of crap. and they, you know, I don't know how to explain it other than that. And so if we're convinced, I mean, that's how Pope Benedict describes a saint. A saint is a convincing personality. So if we're convinced of the truth of the gospel and we're starting to see the benefits of struggling to be a saint, we're going to be convinced enough when we talk to people about, hey, this is good. This is going to help you. It helps me. Yeah. And
yeah, what I've heard from you in previous episodes is, I think, right on the money. I mean, in a workplace environment, you're not leading with biblical quotes, and you're leading with, you know, your competency, your fortitude, your honesty, your industriousness. And that starts to get people's attention. And they say, well, as the example that you just described, in this woman recognizing the virtues you displayed in the workplace, that's a starting point. And then once you've established that, I think, then you can start, you know, when people are going to recognize this guy is good, what he does, and he's trustworthy, and then they're going to start going to you and say, you know, I have this issue. And that's when you can start weaving in some conversations that might seem a little more explicitly doctrinal or theological.
Give him something to read and say, hey, why don't we talk about it next week? Let me know. I'd be interested in what you think.
Yeah.
I mean, they've probably never had someone ask them that, you know, for input on something that's semi-spiritual. But that's what we need to do. We need to pick people up and help them in that way. And see, I think one of the problems we have in the church and evangelization is that you have a lot of people repeating the same thing. And the reality is Christ has already come. He's redeemed us. So now what has to happen is we have to apply the redemption. And that means go out, work, try to be a saint yourself, and then help the people you're with. Mm. And if you can help 20 to 40 people, which everybody can do if they're willing to go out and mix it up, right? That's huge, because it's not like we're going to help millions of people. We don't need to. Christ has already done that job. We just need to apply what he's taught us, live it to ourselves, and then help other people, you know, not be afraid that God isn't an ogre. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to judge you harshly. There's no evidence in scriptures that he judges sinners harshly. The only people he's harsh with are those who are overly dogmatic, the scribes and Pharisees, right?
Mm.
He really goes after them for laying these burdens on people's shoulders that they don't carry themselves and so forth. So we can easily fall into that. What's so beautiful about work is that once you're out there with colleagues, you're not going to get away with BSing. You're just not going to get away with it.
Not for long.
Yeah. So it's good. You're not just going to go out there and tell people what they should be doing or not doing.
Yeah,
that's
good. Yeah. So we're going to leave the football field. We're going to go over to the tennis court. We're going to leave the Midwest. We're going to go up to the Northeast here. We're going to go to Dartmouth. And this guy received quite a bit of attention and very little controversy, just a lot of applause mainly. So Roger Federer delivered the commencement address at Dartmouth College. And he basically, in the course of that commencement speech, he highlighted 3 points. And I thought maybe just touching those quickly here. The first one was effortlessness is a myth, or effortless is a myth. And this is interesting, right? So if anybody follows tennis, Federer was very good. And people would often comment that, you know, he does so well, and just it looks effortless. And he barely breaks a sweat and that kind of thing. And it really kind of it bothered him a little bit, because it kind of belied the incredible amount of effort he put into training and so forth. But I don't know, maybe you can talk to that a little bit for us, that, you know, that's something we should probably aspire towards, right? In certainly in a professional sense, but also just in our engagements with people apostolically, that, you know, we want to look at some level effortless, but there's, of course, a lot of work that goes into this. And maybe talk about that just for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, our Lord tells us, you know, strive to enter through the narrow gate. And strive. You know, many people don't discover it. So we've discovered it, and now we have to strive to enter through it. So there's effort that's required. You know, there's a parable of the two sons. The father tells one, go and work my vineyard. He says, I'll go, yeah, I'll go. And the other one says, I'm not going. And then the latter goes, the former guy doesn't. You know, who did his father's will? You know, then of course there's a Sermon on the Mount. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, you know, our Lord says, well, if you hear my words and act on them, it's like building your house on rock versus sand. And we know what happens in a storm when you build a house on sand, it just collapses. So these storms, what are they? Well, these are the storms we've been talking about, you know, sickness, unemployment, career disillusionment, relationships that have gone astray or awry, divorce, separation, death. These are real storms. These are not like fake storms. These are real things, you know? And so the gospel is going to help us deal with these things, which all of us are going to go through. Nobody's exempt from this. I mean, you know, a good friend of ours, his wife's got, you know, just, they just discovered a tumor in her brain. I mean, now that's changed the configuration of their lives completely forever. So that's, I think making the effort is important. Our Lord wants us to make it. Now, it doesn't mean it's all our effort. And I think that next point he talks about, it's only a point. You want to intro that second point Federer talks about, because I think that's connected with this one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So the second point he made is it's only a point. And he went on to explain that, you know, you can you can put a lot of effort and you can still lose. And he says, and he made the point to the graduates that I have. And he went in and he said, look, I've won 1,500 singles matches I played in my career. He won almost, he played 1,500 single matches and he won 80% of those matches, but he only won 54% of the points. And so the point here is, look, even top-ranked players in the world, you know, they win barely more than half of the points they play. And so, you know, when you're playing the point, he's saying is the most important thing in the world, but, you know, once that's behind you, you have to put it behind you. I mean, once you have to move on. And so that's a mindset he said was really crucial, because it frees you then to commit to the next point and then the one after that and so forth. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're right, Mark. I mean, we're going to get setbacks and we're going to fail. And
I mean, I would
we
just
can't let them discourage us, right?
And I mean, I would just encourage people to read Romans, you know, especially chapters 7 and 8. You know, where St. Paul talks about, you know, the sin that dwells inside of him and the law he knows that he should be obeying, and how the sin beats him down and how he obeys the sin within and not the law without. And I mean, what he's doing is showing us what the struggle is about. And in that process, right, he's becoming a better and better person. You know, he's moving up that inclined plane. He's moving through that narrow gate, because he's willing to take on, you know, the struggles that God has asked us to take on without exaggerating them. Because the other thing that is very important is that God will give you help. He's going to help you in your struggles. But he wants you to make that effort. Why? Because that's your act of faith. The gospel is all about acting on faith. Jesus is always asking people, do you believe I can do this? Or go back to your house. Your son is cured. You know, or to Martha, you know, your brother will rise again. Well, I know he'll rise. No, I am the resurrection. I mean, he's pushing us to act on faith. And so when we do that, he rewards that. How? Why? In his own way, by eliminating obstacles, by taking away temptations that have been plaguing us for years. He can easily dismiss all of those things from our lives.
And of course, a great resource for us, a gift for us, is a great way to put the mistakes behind us, is to go to confession. I mean, not only are sins forgiven, but through absolution, we are free to, you know, to quote what Federer said, to fully commit to the next point with intensity, clarity, and focus.
Yeah. You know, confession is really important. I mean, regular confession, I mean, at least once a month, probably every 2 weeks would be great if you really want to, you know, grow in your spiritual life. And people say, well, I just confess the same sins or I fall into sin. And that's true. I mean, there are only so many sins, right? So you can't really kind of, but the point is you're aligning yourself with the truth over and over again. Every time you do that, you're becoming a slightly more truthful person. So what happens over time is you become a fully truthful person. And the only person who's, you know, full of the truth is Christ. So you become Christ. That's what happens. And people see Christ in you and me, in others who try to do this. And that's exciting, because now you have this mission to help these people, because if you don't help them, they may not make it to heaven. Right. And you and I are the only ones there. You and I are the only ones who may have a, be able to have this moment with them, this conversation. Maybe it's just being understanding, and later on, that's enough for them to come back to the faith. You can't script it, because every person's different.
Right. The last point he makes here, Mark, is that he says life is bigger than the court. And the point he was making there, he made the point that he started his path to professional tennis, you know, really at the age of 14, he moved away from home. And this was the, when he was addressing the graduates, it was the second time he stepped foot on a college campus. So he said, look, I spent a lot of time on a tennis court. He said, it's a small space. It's 2,106 square feet to be exact for single matches. And so then went on and said, you know, you have to extend beyond it. He talked about all the philanthropy he was engaged with and so forth. But, you know, basically the message is life is really much bigger than the court. And I'm just thinking for us, you know, we have to be careful, I think, not to get caught in this trend to get really insular, that, you know, this idea that the world is a big, bad place, kind of let's circle the wagon type of mentality. And of course, naturally, we want to, we do, and we'd like, it's, I think, very good that you gravitate to friends and communities comprised of people who have similar ideals and outlook in life. But I think his point is right. I mean, we need to extend beyond our own little courts in using the gifts that God has given us to bring the message that, of the gospel to all types of environments.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think ideally the parish and the family are going to be your more protected environments, but they're there to prepare us for mission. And mission means you go into unprotected environments. And you don't want to go into places that are, you know, very difficult and not, you know, that are real occasions of sin, but most work environments aren't that. You know, there's some evil in them, but it's you know, we're able to go into them. And I think that that's what we have to have. We need to kind of find our niche professionally and go into those environments and help the people that we're working with. See, because if we do that, then when you come home and talk to your kids and they want to know, well, why are you going on a retreat? Why are you going to mass every day? Blah, blah, blah. You can say, well, I'm trying to help my colleagues. I'm trying to carry out this mission that Jesus gave us in the gospel.
Yeah.
And then they can put one and two together and they can say, okay, you mean, yeah. And maybe over the course of my life, I'll help 100 people. And then when I die and I'm judged by God, I have something to talk to him about. That's kind of a vision of life that we want to spread and help people to adopt, because that can be carried out regardless if you're a world-class tennis player or you're just a good baker at Dunkin' Donuts or you're just a driver of medical supplies on the South Shore. Who knows, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that, I think, is important. Find your niche, then find what is your role in that niche. Who do you work with, and what are you bringing to that niche? I mean, just kind of give you a quick overview. I mean, I looked, you know, and I was just trying to discern my vocation. I found, okay, God wanted me to join Opus Dei. Okay, so that was my niche. Who do I work with? Well, my professional colleagues. So when I was younger, in summers between school, I had professional colleagues work with them, and then I started a professional career after that. What do I tell them? Well, the intellectual and spiritual insights God's given me and that I've developed through my own interior life and study with Opus Dei's help and so forth and tried to live. That's what I share with them, because then they can try to do it on their own, or not on their own, but with God as well. So I would encourage people to do that, because you can't live your whole life vicariously. You can't be always looking at someone else's life and just admiring it. You and I have to go out and live it and do it. And then you'll feel energized and you'll feel joy. Then the joy of the gospel becomes reality. That's a great document, by the way. I would highly recommend people look at that periodically, Joy of the Gospel, because...
That's Pope Benedict?
Pope Francis.
Pope Francis.
He's got some, you know, great insights there. Even if it's just the first 15 pages, you know, just read that.
The joy of the gospel.
Yeah, the joy of the gospel. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good. So let's, we've got a little over, but we've all graduated. We can stand up, toss our caps off here.
That's right.
Graduated another episode.
That's right. We're moving forward. So we'll try to be more timely.
Yeah, we'll be more timely. So yeah, hopefully no medical afflictions. And you, of course, had a really good break. So thank you once again, Mark, for great commentary and insights. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we'll see you in the next couple of weeks here back on The Mark.
Thanks. Thanks, Peter. Take care.
Thanks for listening to On The Mark with Peter Buckley and Mark O'Donnell. If you enjoy our podcast, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify to be notified every time Peter and Mark release a new episode. And visit us on the web at onthemark.show.